stepping in on Jimenez. Now Daichi Kamada. Roll through for Eddie Nketiah. Nketiah scores! Palace are 3-0 up! Bassi plays him on, and Nketiah keeps his call. Through the legs of Leno, and Palace through to the semi-finals for sure.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Yes, that's nice and loud there from Terry because he's doing a lot of work today. He's going to be doing the work of two panelists today because it's just me and Terry, and I'm too busy doing the hosting of this. So Terry has to be the sole talking head this week.
Talking for two, I can do it. I've done it before. I feel I can do it again.
Of course, this weekend, we've had a lot taken out of us because we've been on an emotional roller coaster. You especially. Saturday was a day of days for you, wasn't it?
It really was. It's actually been a good weekend. But yeah, Saturday specifically was a day of days. Shall I talk you through it? Or should I talk you through the first part of it?
Well, you can talk me through the whole thing because I was with you. But basically for the listeners.
For the benefit of the listeners, yeah. No, obviously, I mean, you probably find this a bit boring because you were literally there. Nevertheless, obviously, yeah, Crystal Palace, my team, played Fulham at Fulham in the quarterfinal of the Cup.
Yep.
Previewed in the box set. Very, very important game. Palace won 3-0. Almost a flawless display. Almost a flawless display. Close enough to being flawless. Absolutely superb. I spent quite a lot of time being unnecessarily nervous watching that game.
He really did.
Because Graham was watching it with me, listeners, and he was saying, Palace are much better. Fulham are terrible. Why are you worrying? And he was right. And then it was down to the Leaf. Buoyed by that, flushed with that success, very, very happy, off to Wembley, semi-finals and all that, off the Leaf for the semi-final, first leg of the FA Vars between Whiteleaf and Andover New Street. And Whiteleaf win 3-1. And in front of a packed house
yes,
at Church Road. And if that wasn't enough, admittedly, this is somewhat more in your schadenfreude, but I made it home in time to watch the penalty shootout between Forest and Brighton. And me and the missus sitting there watching it on the phone in the dining room when Forest win, and we're going, yeah. Because it means, one, the schadenfreude of watching Brighton lose on penalties, always fun, never gets old. I'm sure Brighton fans feel exactly the same about Palace. But also it means it avoids the uncertainty and peril and concern about Palace playing Brighton in the semi-final or perhaps even the final of the FA Cup.
Yes, I did say immediately after the game, I asked Terry, who don't you want in the semi-finals? And your first answer, wasn't it?
Brighton.
Yeah.
Only if we can win.
Yeah.
I'll have them if we can win. But if we lose, I'm not interested.
Yeah.
Because it's too much. So maybe another time.
Yeah. We're going to talk about all of those games now. I'll start off with the Leaf game because this one is... Well, it's a difficult position now, isn't it? We're 3-1 up. Mainly bossed that game against Andover New Street. And yeah, it was a comfortable-ish win. Leaf were 2-0 up. Then they conceded one early doors in the second half, and that made it a lot more tighter and a lot closer. And actually, Andover and New Street were very, very unlucky not to get an equaliser. Leaf got a third goal very, very deep into injury time, about 10 minutes in. There had been a couple of stoppages. We had a very high-profile referee for it as well. Of course, it seems weird now that I was surprised by it, but yeah, we actually had Robert Massey-Ellis, who perhaps is better known as being the husband of Sian Massey, the first female official in the Premier League, I think.
I think so. The one famously referenced in the Andy Gray and Richard Keys and Andy Burton debacle that caused the massive shake-up. Not that she had anything to do with
that. No, of course, yes.
Because a female linesman. And then it all unraveled from there. Surprising, but not surprising.
Yes, yeah.
it's the FA Vars semi-final.
Yeah.
It's one of the biggest games in the non-league calendar. So, yes, you'd be looking to get probably a more senior referee to come in and officiate that.
But it was noticeable that we had proper referees this time around. I mean, because Robert Ellis mainly does National League, League Two, I think, level of refereeing. But I think he's also done Championship as fourth official. So these guys were a cut above what we usually get at Step 5 of non-league. And that's not throwing shade on the guys on Step 5 of non-league, but they're at Step 5 of non-league because they're not as good as the guys who are doing it at the top level. Now, it is one where if you're good, you rise up the ranks, isn't it? That's the basic principle of refereeing in this country, isn't it? Yeah, the better you are, the higher you get.
It does feel like a genuine meritocracy.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I know we like to have fun particularly the celebrity referees, you know, and stuff like that. So I may be wrong about this. I mean, this would be something I suppose any referees who listen to the show and maybe are closer to it may be wrong about this. They say, well, no, actually, it's a really, really horrific greasy pole, and it's all done it's all done through backhanders or through what you know and who you know. And there's a rigid class system in referees of which there is no way of going through. But I don't think that is the case. I think it's actually is done by, you know, because you can measure the performance of a referee.
Yeah, of course you can. Yeah.
And if they score well, they get better games. And if they score badly, then they go to Whiteleaf.
Listeners, if you do know what the sordid inner workings of how refereeing promotion actually works, then please do get in touch, especially if you've got a hideously large chip on your shoulder about the whole thing. You know, if your fingers have been burnt by the whole situation, then please, please, we want to hear that even more. Yeah, your skewed opinions, please.
We'll give you your platform. We'll definitely give you your platform, and we will not allow the refereeing people the right of reply. An unanswered platform. It's yours. All you have to do is get in touch.
Yeah, but you really have to come up with some really juicy gossip.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Otherwise, I'm not interested.
Yeah, it's got to be completely unsubstantiated as well. That's what we want.
We may need to get you to sign some forms before you go on, though. But yeah, apart from that... It's pretty standard, nothing to worry about.
Yeah. But let's not talk about the referees, even though it was a fabulous display from them, because we didn't really notice them, apart from the fact they were keeping up with play and remarkably. And they got the spray out as well. We had spray.
We had
the free
spray.
Kicks.
I know, we don't get magic spray. Until that was wild. Do you think they must have brought it with them, presumably?
Oh, yeah, must have done. Yeah, of course it's his own, isn't it? I mean, like, you know. He probably has to write his name on it, because, like, when he puts it on the shelf at home, in case Sean picks it up by mistake.
Love, you taking my spray again? One can only imagine.
Oh, yeah. Those are my cards. How do you know they're your cards? You never think about these things, do you? But, you know, obviously this is what happens, isn't it?
Not until now, anyway.
But, of course, I'm talking like this because I'm trying to put off the idea that Leaf have got one foot on Wembley Way.
Mm.
Can't think of it too much. I can't think of, like, you know, blocking out May the 11th in my diary, even though I really should, because otherwise it just gets filled with other stuff.
Because you're such a busy guy.
I'm such a busy guy.
You've got such a terrific social whirl.
It's heady, yes.
I'd block it out if I were you. I don't think it's hubristic to block it out.
I don't think it's
just a question of, like, keeping it out.
Yeah, well, I've got to be watching it anyway, haven't I? So,
well, this is it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what else is there? You know, you've got to, because you'd have to watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely don't block it out.
Yeah.
I thought that Andover, New Street were extremely dangerous on the counter. Very, very, very fast, very pacey.
Yes.
It will be interesting to see how that works when they are playing at home, two goals down, clearly with the expectation is that they're going to have, presumably, try and get as much of the possession. Whiteleaf play possession game pretty much home and away as far as I can make out.
Yeah.
Andover definitely played low block, definitely looked to break through Whiteleaf's lines. And were unlucky not to score two goals. That said, Leaf should have scored two more, I think, than they did. So I would suggest it's in the balance. The balance firmly in favour of Whiteleaf.
Yes.
Because of the two goals.
Yeah.
But still in the balance.
Yeah.
It's going to be a nervous 90 minutes, I think, unless Whiteleaf can get an early goal or something.
It all depends on an early goal, doesn't it? In the first quarter of an hour, if Andover get a goal in the first quarter of an hour, game on. If Leaf get a goal in the opening quarter of an hour, yeah. But anyway, lots to look forward to there. And Leaf, they've still got promotion to go for as well. That's looking less likely because Jersey have just been incredible this season. They've only lost one game. to Whiteleaf. And there's Redhill as well. There's three teams in Whiteleaf's division with a point per game ratio of 2.5 or above. There's only seven teams, I think, in the whole of Step 5 that are that good. Three of them are in this one division. So it's been ultra competitive between those three sides this season. There are barely any points dropped. And unfortunately, only two of them can go up unless there's some jiggery pokery.
Which does happen.
Usually happens when teams fold at the end of the season, which is a sad way to go. Let's hope that doesn't happen. But who knows? Who knows how they're going to work it out at the end of the day? Yeah, we're all about the Leaf at the moment, but plenty of other football is happening, including the FA Cup semi-finals. We now have the draw. The draw's been made. And looking at the draw, it looks like some kind of property show. You've either got Palace versus Villa or Forest versus City. Yeah, I mean, like that. The other one's a bit more extreme, isn't it? Palace versus Villa, that's your high-end choice, isn't it, really?
Yeah. But yeah, they're both lifestyle choices, Palace or Villa, Forest or City. Yeah, there's definitely a sense of place about the semi-final lineup, isn't there?
Definitely. We don't know which days they're going to be on, but I think it, because that's all tied up with telly and everything, but I think it's looking more likely that Palace Villa is going to be the first one up on Saturday, I think.
Right.
But that's purely because Villa potentially have Champions League the following week and so could be playing on the Tuesday. So they may... Yeah. So I think that's how it's going
to
work.
That'd be the neighbourly thing to do, wouldn't it?
Yeah, Villa cruised through in the end, didn't they? Past Preston North End. Preston, who hadn't lost at home for 5 months, I think, and... Marcus Rashford on the score sheet twice. Villa pretty much eased through in the end. Forest had to go through another round of penalties. They're third. They've got to the semi-finals by winning just one game.
Mm-hmm.
One game they've won and they're in the semi-final.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's modern football for you, isn't it, Terry?
It is modern football. I mean, in fairness, it's been modern football for some years now. Because there are plenty of examples domestically and internationally where, yeah, you get through on the penalty shoot. I mean, fair play to Forest for having the nerve and the chutzpah to be able to see these through. But they're kind of, you would feel, I know City have not been superb this season, but you would feel in a one-off game that Forest might need to try and win that game. I'm not sure whether or not they're going to be able to get as far as penalties. I feel that City will probably have too much. And of course, for City, this is it, really. I mean, it's not kind of their season. I mean, they've still got Champions League qualification, so they've still got stuff to play for. But if they want silverware this season, then it's the FA Cup. So they've got to go for that. So I think they'll be committed and it will be a big, big challenge for Forest.
I suppose a lot of that is going to really depend on how they are at the time with their Champions League qualification for next season, isn't it?
Well, that's more important, isn't it?
Well, for City it is.
Yeah.
Even though they've got all that money coming in from the Club World Cup this summer, more on that later. And Forest, they really just want to be in there, don't they? But I suppose it really depends on where they are come the end of April when these ties are played, isn't it, really?
If you're a Forest fan...
Yeah.
Difficult to put yourself in the position of another club's fan because you've been like, who knows? I don't know how it feels to be a Forest fan. But let's just try and imagine being a Forest fan with their history and with their situation and their recent history and all of that. Which would you prefer? Would you prefer the Cup or would you prefer the Champions League? Let us say you are given a binary choice. There's a lot of ifs going on here in this question. but
you can't say if you're a Forest fan. I don't think you can club all Forest fans into that. But just by looking at it, and if I was to cosplay as a Forest fan right now, the lure of lifting a trophy is huge, and you can't avoid that. And especially one that you haven't won since the 1950s. In controversial manner, I understand, against Luton Town in 1959. So barely anyone remembers Forest lifting the FA Cup, but there is a lot more people who remember them lifting the European Cup in the late 70s. And I think that's so much part of their narrative as a club to get back into that competition, although a completely different version of that same competition, going for that same trophy. I think there is a lure there. And I think obviously you want both, but
sure,
if you were to say to them, okay, you can only have one, what would you rather have? Because let's face it, you win a cup and it's lovely and you're in the Europa League next season, but it's not the it's not the European Cup, is it?
No, it's not.
Do you want to be in the European Cup or do you want to be in the Europa League?
Yeah.
I personally, I would say win the FA Cup because you're going to be playing European football next season.
Yeah, I think that that's fair. I certainly think that that's how I would look at it if Palace were in that same position, which obviously they're not.
Yeah.
But Palace have a completely different history to Forest.
Yeah.
But I would still say, look, I'd rather go for the silverware, thanks.
Yeah.
Rather than a Champions League spot. But happily, these are entirely hypothetical questions. It doesn't really matter because I was going to say, hopefully for Forest, they'll get both. But of course, I don't mean that. I mean, but it's possible that Forest, there's worse things could happen in football if Forest were to achieve Champions League football and lift the FA Cup.
Yeah. 9 games to go. Forest are 9 points clear inside the European places, assuming that Newcastle finish in the top 7, assuming that we get the extra places, the extra Champions League place, which looks almost certain because we've got so many clubs still vying for silverware in there and looking good for winning it. It would not surprise me if the Europa League and the Conference League both go to English clubs this year. Not so sure about the Champions League, but it looks like we're going to get 5 Champions League places this year, so which could be the way that City sneak through in the end into the top 5. But it's so close there, down to, well, even Bournemouth on 44. So you've got Chelsea on 49, City on 48, Newcastle, Brighton on 47, Fulham and Villa on 45, Bournemouth on 44. It's just so tight, 9 games to go.
Yeah.
All those clubs could have very, very realistic European ambitions. And clubs like City could find themselves missing out if they drop the ball, don't they, really? So, I mean, I know it's thin gruel as far as like a run-in is concerned or end-of-season excitement is concerned, but actually this is quite exciting when you've got new clubs like this actually chasing for these places. And who knows, Palace are a little bit adrift of that, and there are too many bodies in the way, you feel, for them to mount a challenge to get to the Conference League. But it's not impossible, is it?
It's not out of the question, and the form that they're in at the moment, there's a possibility that they could have a very, very strong run into the end of the season. And yeah, if other clubs fall away, we might yet be able to sneak a Conference League place. I mean, of course, there is the possibility of a Europa League spot for Palace, of course, if they win the FA Cup. But yeah, I mean, that's a bit premature, but just a bit.
Yes.
My theory is, though, Graham,
yeah,
is that they will win the FA Cup. Should I tell you why?
Go for it. Go for it, please.
Because when the FA Cup is on, I will be on a ferry between Aberdeen and the Orkney Islands, because I booked my holiday to start the day before the FA Cup final, thinking, yeah, well, should we go here? Should we go on this date? Oh, yeah, there's the FA Cup final. But yeah, it's fine. We'll go there now. It's not like Palace are going to make it, is it? And, well, they might. They just might. So under Sod's law,
yes,
they will actually win. Just because I probably won't be able to, if I do watch the game, it'll be on my phone with a very, very patchy North Sea Wi-Fi.
I mean, it's not the end of the world, is it, Terry? Because
no,
at least you've got a trip to Wembley and the semi-finals, that's right, yeah?
Well, it's interesting that you should say that, but if you care to check your calendar once again, Graham, you'll find that the lads' Euro trip to Stockholm is that weekend.
Yes. The lads' football weekend, which has 3 Crystal Palace fans amongst it, yes.
So won't be going to that either. but that's okay. Because that's okay, because if that happens, if that's the price that has to be paid for Palace winning the cup, then it is a price I will pay. I'll make this pact with the football gods now. If you can guarantee me that Palace will win the FA Cup, then it'll be fine if I don't watch it. I can't get reception on this ferry that's bobbling its way up to the Orkney Islands between Aberdeen and Orkney, then that's absolutely fine. I take that. That's a fair trade. And then I want a fucking statue.
The bronze man will be busy, won't he?
No, that would be great. That would be amazing. The main thing is, if Palace won the cup, it would just be amazing. And yeah, it'd be great to see. Obviously, it'd be good to see it there, but it wouldn't matter if it didn't.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter whether I'm there or not.
Pep will have taken City to Wembley 21 times.
That's wild, isn't it? Take away the emotional side of it. Look at it from a journalistic point of view, which is kind of funny. But as a podcaster, pundit person, you're looking at it thinking, well, this is probably City's cup, isn't it? Because they always win it.
Yeah.
They love the cup and they're always winning. And Pep loves the cup. And so it's very, very hard to look past City at this point as a potential winner. But it is fun and exciting that there are other potential winners there.
Yeah.
Who haven't won it in an age, and in Palace's case, haven't won it ever. So, yeah.
It's their seventh consecutive semi-final, extending their own record. But they've lost three of those and won three. So it's not always nailed on.
No, I suppose not. No, you put it like that, yeah.
But his form in the FA Cup is ridiculous. I don't know if you read the box set that I wrote last weekend, there was an incredible stat in there that since he joined in 2016, the only FA Cup tie away from Wembley that they've lost was in 2018 against Wigan. And that's the only game they've lost at a ground that wasn't Wembley.
I remember that game. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because there was a bit of argy-bargy between those two, wasn't it? Yeah. That sounds like fun. Yeah, of course, Wigan beat City in the final, of course.
Of course they did, yes. Well, so do we reckon Forest-Palace final then? Is that what you're thinking?
Well, again, objectively, Villa are a very, very good side. But we have got a bit of a hoodoo over them. We knocked them out of the League Cup. We've got a decent enough record about them recently. But they are on a different level, I'd say, Villa. And I think if they turn up for this game, it's going to be really, really difficult for Palace to get by. But again, I stress, Palace genuinely, genuinely one of the form teams of the Premier League for the last few weeks, for the last couple of months, really. So a really, really competitive game. But yeah, the romantic in me obviously feels that Palace and, you know, and the fact that I can't make it for the games suggests that Sod's Law kicks in. But I think if you're looking at it from hard-nosed football, then it's difficult to see past Villa. The City Forest game's a harder one to call. I would say.
Yeah.
But I'd still say that it could be actually a City-Villa final.
The Palace semi-final really depends on where Villa are, what position they're in. They've got this quarter-final against PSG, Unai Emery's old club. That's going to take a lot out of them, win or lose.
Yeah.
But if they come out the other side of that, I think they'll only be focused on progress in the Champions League and they'll have one eye firmly fixed on that going into the semi-final.
Yeah, agree.
Doesn't necessarily mean they can't win both, but yeah.
No. Yeah, I mean, if he feels he has to rotate,
yeah,
then he'll do it for the FA Cup semi-final.
Yeah, I think he will.
Well, of course he will. And that would be the correct thing to do.
Yeah, because the semi-final would be against the winner of Arsenal or Real Madrid as well. So,
right.
So, yeah, more history then in the semi-finals as well.
Yeah. It's all about Unai, isn't it?
It is, isn't it, really? It really is.
It's really all about Unai Emery.
He could get to the final by beating two of his old clubs.
Or Real Madrid. So, yeah, I mean, again, and everything that what that means.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, sorry, Villa. It's not actually, this is not about you at all. This is about your coach.
Well, we've got to park thoughts of the FA Cup now for, what, I think 4 weeks now, really, isn't it? Well, that's how long it is before we go off to Stockholm, isn't it, Terry?
That's right. Yeah, indeed. Yeah. Really looking forward to that trip.
I wouldn't mind, listeners, but this was actually organised by a Palace fan, this trip. So, and he picked out this date in the diary.
Yeah.
It could also be double bubble that weekend because Leaf will be playing their playoff match on that weekend if we don't win the title, which is probable.
And we won't be able to watch that in a bar in Stockholm, will we?
We won't be able to watch that in a bar in Stockholm. But yeah, so we've got such a busy time with semi-finals, with playoffs and Leaf going on from strength to strength. And man, it's insane. 2,000 people were there at Church Road. 2,000.
It's crazy. It's incredible. We'd never seen anything like it.
No. When we started going there over a decade ago, we were doing well to get over 100 there, weren't we?
Yeah. Well, they were terrible.
Yeah, they were.
To be fair.
Yeah.
But even now, this season, what is it? What's the average attendance, would you say?
Probably about 250, 300, I suppose.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's still, I mean, that's not a lot of people. That's plenty of room at the bar, put it that way.
Yeah, certainly. If you leave about a minute before or after, you can get in there and there won't be a big snaking queue out the door.
No.
There were just far too many people there this weekend. Far too many people. All these Johnny-come-latelys all hoping to get their day out at Wembley, eh?
Yeah, tourists, honestly.
But the club's done pretty well out of it, made loads of money in prize money for it, and took... Well, there was some ridiculous number going around on the volunteers group chat, and I'm sure they won't mind if I disclose it, but the club shop took 2.5 grand. on Saturday. $2,500 in just one day.
That's wild.
Now, the previous record for a season for Whyteleafe was £1,800. And Whyteleafe beat it in a day.
Mm.
It's just, not just beat it by about 40%. These times won't come back again for a while yet, I don't think. Yeah, enjoy them while they last.
I mean, hopefully there'll be a proportion of them, of people that will decide to become season ticket holders or regular, but you'd be surprised if the gate was to double on average next season. Yeah, these are special days, but it just underlines the... That's underlined the value of merch at a football club.
It really does. I mean, when I found out that, I thought, this is why the clubs go such a bundle on it, because people spend money. They need something physical, don't they, to take home with them, to say, look, yeah, this is part of who I am now.
That's right. You've got two things going on there, really. You've got that drive, yeah, to identify yourself with the club that you love. And so there's no better way of doing that. Well, all right, there are better ways of doing it, but a very, very good way of doing that is through merch. It's like by wearing something that you can walk out in the street with a degree of pride and say, I am a Palace fan, I'm a Leaf fan, I'm an Arsenal fan. You know, this is who I am, this is part of who I am. And merch does that. But then there's also the other thing is like you also want a souvenir, a memory of the moment. And you can say, oh, I bought that cap, I bought that scarf on that particular match day, I bought that in that semi-final, I remember it well, it was fantastic. And people want to do that, and it's meaningful. It has meaning, and it's quite lovely. And also, it's a fantastic opportunity for clubs to make quite a lot of money by charging well over the odds for them.
It's easy to be cynical about merch, isn't it, really? Because they charge an absolute packet for it. Cynicism is built into it, and they create so much of it. They're constantly coming up with new designs and things just to part you with your hard-earned cash. I've been going to see a lot of Arsenal women play up at the Emirates this season. And it's been amazing there because there have been so many fans new to football coming along. It's obvious that they are new to football. Lots of people getting pictures taken with the stadium behind them. Lots and lots of selfies being taken. The sort of things you tend to see when there are people going there for their first match experience. And nearly everyone there has got a bag from the club shop. Whether it's a cuddly Gunnosaurus, a new hat, a scarf, a sweatshirt, whatever, a hoodie. People have gone in there and they're buying stuff. The kids are just walking out with armfuls of swag from their trip to the Emirates. And of course, you can see this is part of the whole thing of Arsenal's focus on the women's team is a completely different demographic in the people who are coming towards the game. Because obviously for men's football, the demographic is still largely male. Largely male, largely in a very condensed age group as well. There are kids that go to Arsenal men's games, but not to the same proportion as goes to the women's game. It's been an interesting thing for me to watch. I look at the crowd almost as much as I watch the game that's going on, just to try and gauge what is actually happening with the club. Most of the games I've been to this season have been over 30,000. What I find fascinating is breaking it down into how the crowd changes when it's a different match time. So there's been a couple of evening kickoffs I've been to. There was a Friday night one against Brighton, and that had a completely different vibe about it. That was full of groups. It felt like after-work groups coming along there, which, because of the ease of being able to get tickets, it is easier to get groups of you together to go there and sit together and watch a football game, which is something that used to be a common thing in football, going to a football game with all your mates and just deciding on the day whether or not you're going to go or not. But in modern times, it's not so easy just to do that, is it? You've got to end up being sat all over the place, like trying to find tickets from here and there, unless you know someone who's got a box. And then obviously you've got a different match experience altogether, haven't you?
Yeah, that's not even remotely the same thing, isn't it, really, if you're privileged enough to know someone who's got a box? Because there's only, I mean, like the Emirates, for example, has got a lot of boxes, but you know, not that many. But yeah, I mean, and even the further down the league you go, It is harder to just rock up to any kind of league game in England and just buy a ticket with your mates. It's a shame, but it can't be helped. It is what it is. I think that's the opportunity, I suppose, that women's football has, isn't it? Is to sort of like try and get that different type of audience. So, yeah, on a Friday night, it's going to be more, yeah, friends after work. And then on the Sunday afternoons, Saturday afternoons, or weekends generally, more of your yeah. younger families and a completely different vibe. Whereas really, when you go to a men's football match, a league match, it's more or less the same experience, isn't it? Because it's going to be season ticket holders mostly, or regulars mostly. As you say, it's mostly blokes. And yeah, the custom with men's football in England, as it is in across Europe, I would suggest, is beer and then into the ground as soon as possible. Certainly in England and in Scotland, less so much in Europe, where they do like to get in, the ultras like to get in nice and early. But yeah, traditionally, you don't spend much money on your merch because you've probably bought your shirt for the season, or you're still wearing the shirt from the previous season or from 10 years ago. I was watching the Palace game. There were guys there wearing shirts with TDK on, the sponsors on them, with Virgin. I saw one kid with wearing a Virgin shirt. You know, that's the 1990s, you know, yeah. as was the TDK thing. So I think, and this is all, you know, fag paper analysis here, but I mean, the tendency, I think, is that the men see themselves more as regulars, and they just come along, go to the pub, and then, you know, a few minutes before kickoff, they pile into the stadium. They don't stop at the merch stand. They don't want to take selfies. They don't need to do any of that kind of stuff, because maybe they have this sort of like sense of ownership over the club, which is fine. But when you're looking at it from the club's point of view, you're saying, actually, what would be really good was if we could actually mix it up and have different people coming in, because they come in and they would spend more money. If I could shut down and close up all the season tickets, Arsenal could probably, they would never do this, and I'm certainly not saying that they should do this. They could have season ticket blackout days and say, well, actually, these are going on open sale. No season tickets holders, sorry. So new fans only. Because they'd fill it out, no problem at all. They're not the only club that could do that. Plenty of clubs in the Premier League would do that. They'd fill it out and they'd make an absolute packet on the merch stand and anywhere else. Mm. Because, you know, for that reason, because it'd be like, wow, I get to go to the Emirates. Like, if you went to a men's game, for example, well, you might be slightly different because you've been to quite a few men's games down the years. But, like, you probably would take a few moments to take in the atmosphere, the opportunity to actually go and see the arse at, you know,
yeah.
for the first time, because you haven't got a season ticket and you don't get to go along that often.
Yeah.
And imagine what they'd be like then if a whole family of Arsenal fans who have never been before get the chance to go along.
That's the thing about cup ties, isn't it? Oh, that's what that offers.
Yeah.
If you had a League Cup tie on a weekend.
On a weekend.
Mm. How many people would you be getting there? Because they obviously have the League Cup ties, and they're not always sold out, even though they are at a heavily discounted rate. But you do get the feeling that if you're an irregular fan, going to midweek Emirates matches can be a bit of a ball ache, because getting out there at 10 o'clock...
Definitely.
If it goes to extra time, which for some baffling reason they still do go to extra time and penalties, then you're not getting out there till really late. And it's certainly not going to bring that family demographic along, is it? But if they had a League Cup game at a weekend, then maybe that would. Maybe you'd see something completely different then. That's something more like what you see when the women play. Yeah, interesting experiment. Will never, ever happen.
No. No, and I'm not suggesting that it should either. Yeah. But it would be an interesting to see what would happen if it did.
Yeah. Bloody season ticket holders, eh? Ruining it for all the plastic fans.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I am not advocating that hardened season ticket holders be pushed aside for tourists. I really am not. That's not what I'm saying.
There is another conversation to be had, because one thing I have noticed as well about fans that go along to support Arsenal, ostensibly go to support Arsenal, and they're new to the sport. It's something that I picked up on social media years ago, and it's something that I've got used to. And that's the fact of how people who are becoming introduced to the game now are more likely to be fans of personalities than teams.
Yes, this is a fact. Yes, this is a fact.
Which to diehard football fans seems weird, strange, but it's something that you can get your head around and accept. And I think we should accept and welcome it, because people consume football in different ways, don't they?
I completely agree with that. Yeah. And again, when I found out about that, I was like, my first thought was, look, no, that's not true. And then then I was assured that there was hard data to back this up.
Yeah.
The latest cohort or cohorts of football fans, and these are fans, these aren't fans of, like, you know, five-a-side football or any other variation. These are football fans, but they actually follow players rather than following necessarily the actual clubs. And I think that's really interesting. It's clearly a product of the television age, of your watching, clearly a product of football fans who probably will never really have the opportunity to ally themselves to a specific club because they don't live in the area, or because if they did live in the area, they don't have access to the tickets. And also the way football is presented.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is all about the players now. And I don't think this is a bad thing. I don't think this is unhelpful. It's a bit weird.
Yeah.
I mean, when turning up at Palace the other week and seeing like the cohorts of Japanese fans who were there to see Daichi Kamada misplace a pass, or, you know, kick a player, or drop a piece of silverware, or, you know, or just generally, you know, great assist on Saturday, by the way, Daichi. But, you know, those guys were there to watch Daichi Kamada because they are fans of him.
Yeah.
And you think, well, you know what, that's actually perfectly great. And I'm not here to tell people how they should enjoy their football.
As watchers of the game, rather than just spectators of the football, it is something that I find interesting. I know you do as well. But it's a fascinating thing to see a development of how things can change.
Totally. I would say that we probably, us generally, as you and me,
yeah,
perhaps Jan, we're probably game first fans.
Yeah.
And there are people who are club first, there are people who are country first, and there are people who are game first.
Yeah.
So why not have people who are like player first?
Yeah.
So it makes complete sense. Of, right, we're all watching football, we're all watching the same game, we're all enjoying it.
Mm.
But if our perspectives are somewhat different, the way we look at the game is somewhat different, we give a shit about the game as a whole. Whereas there are people who legitimately like don't really care about the rest of the game. They're only interested in what happens to their club. And fair play to them. They're absolutely right to think that and feel that way. So, yeah, I don't consider this to be alien or wrong or modern.
No, it's just interesting.
Hmm.
I shudder to think there's like people under 30 now, if we have that demographic, listening to this podcast, going cringing at old guys to get, oh, isn't it quaint how people like... And oh God, yeah, all right, Grandad, do you want a cup of tea? Yes.
Sorry for the cringe, listeners. Sorry for the cringe. Yeah.
Well, which personalities are we going to be watching this weekend? I wonder.
We should do a box set one day where instead of putting the names of the teams, we put the names of prominent players instead.
Okay, right, quick. I've got to think fast here as we go.
Hang on a second. All right. Well, I've got the list here as well. I'll give you a hand.
Well. We've got Leah Williamson's national side is going to be taking on Belgium this weekend. Well, like that? Is that how we do this?
That's
now?
Close, yeah. I'm getting there. Yeah, I think you might struggle with Luton v Leeds.
Yeah, I think I might do as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so England face Belgium in the Women's Nations League on Friday night. Plenty of new fans turning up to Ashton Gate, I would imagine, on Friday night just to buy lots and lots of merchandise from there. And just pick out their favourite England players. That's how it works now. So, yeah, good for you.
Yeah, get on board, yeah.
Yeah, enjoy your night at Ashton Gate there. Across the weekend, we've got the big derby between United and City. That's going to be a game, isn't it, on Sunday afternoon?
Well, they always are, aren't they? and with midweek round as well in between, so they'll be bruised and battered. Always a must-watch game, United versus City. And, yeah, enough peril in both... Well, certainly plenty of peril with United. It feels it's been a few weeks since we've talked about United. Isn't that funny? Well, but I suppose it's because they've not been doing much. They're, you know, international break, and then in the cup, and they're out of the cup. So yeah, so a chance for us to create some content about Manchester United, definitely.
Always, always good. I'm going to ask Gary to do another A League preview for Adelaide United because they were involved in a 5-3 match last week.
Blimey.
Against Victory. A game in which the lead changed three times. madness. So he's going to write that one. It's on at 9:35 Saturday morning. They play Sydney. I reckon that's going to be about 7-0, I think, or something like that.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Yeah, let's hope so.
Let's hope that. And we've got Roma Juve finishing up the weekend. Igor Tudor now in charge of Juve. Thiago Motta got fired just before the international break.
Yeah, I don't want to be like Serie A know it all because I'm really not, but like, yeah, fair enough. Thiago Motta, they put an awful lot in to get Thiago Motta, and you just think, well, okay, fine, if you have to just let him go, but is that Igor Tudor? I don't believe is anyone's long-term answer to any kind of question posed related to football. I wouldn't say that to his face, obviously, because this is the hard part. He would probably beat me up. But, you know, I am that's I mean, it's Juve, so who cares? But, you know, yeah, I'm not certain that's one has been thought through.
Yes, yeah, well, yeah, and Roma have had their managerial appointment issues themselves, haven't they? So could be some fun and games there at the Stadio Olimpico on Sunday night. And if you want to see what we think about all those games, all seven games that we think you should be watching from Friday to Sunday, then get along to our website, sofpodcast.com. Click on the link for the weekend box set and subscribe. Sign up to our Substack and it will be in your inbox on Friday and you'll be able to read all about those games. Probably be a bit of a rush on the Premier League ones because we do have a full English week this week. There's a load of midweek fixtures, as Terry just alluded to just then. And so it's going to be a busy midweek. So we always try to leave it until the last moment, if that's the case, to write our previews. Otherwise, our takes get a bit stale, don't they, Terry?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's going to be a bit of a tricky one, which is probably why I'm quite pleased to take a Bundesliga fixture as one of them. Because I can get started on that early.
Yes. But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, and from Terry DeFellow, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football. Or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now!
I love a bit of merch. I mean, I don't go mad for it, but I do love a bit of merch.
Yeah, and some of it is really nice, so, yeah.
Yes. Merch chat.
We never talk about merch, do we? So
it's because Jan's not here.
He'll be really annoyed that he missed out on merch chat. Because he'll probably say, look, I buy more merch than you two combined.
He would be right.
And he would be right.